The following is a presentation of the Control Trends Podcasting Network.
Hi, welcome to Control Talk, now your smart buildings video cast and podcast for the week ending December 30th, 2018. This is the last show of the year. It is episode 297, where we talk about all things smart controls, all things smart, and of course, to bring in in this year and bring in the new year, we got the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Mark Petock, and the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers. We got two great folks to bring the year in. Boys, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be with you, Eric and Ken. Can't believe this is the end of 2018. And you know what I was just thinking, guys? I was looking back at some archives about control trends, and in preparation for the Control Trend Awards coming up next month, and it dawned on me, Control Trends is celebrating 10 years old, 2018. Are you kidding me? Just 10 years? Where has the time gone, gents?
That's for sure.
It has been 10 years, so we're going into our 11th year, and what a partnership that Kenny and I have here. We kind of go way back, and yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, so, you know, I know the story, but I doubt that several of the listeners know the story. How did you guys first meet, and how did you come up with this whole concept of control trends, and what made you make that leap, and the leap of faith, I guess, is truly what it is. To start this whole thing?
Well, it sort of started with me, Marcus. I would always walk through our sales office and people would be trying to explain to other people, you know, no, this thing's on the back of the thermostat. That's where the part number is. And I'd hear the same things over and over again. So I kept going, somebody should just do a video of it so that we could send them a link to the video and we could show them versus having to explain it every time. And after about the 100th time of doing this, I got really upset and I went and bought a video camera. And so now I got this video camera and I'm starting to shoot the videos. And well, what do I do with them? I figured I could put them on YouTube. But then the best use of the video came in because I had salespeople always, always coming in to talk to me about wanting to do product demos. And so I just said, wow, I'll just take a video of them doing the product demo and then I can show my team. And then after that, I said, well, then I could put it up on YouTube. And then out of that was sort of born the website, okay? So go back a couple years before that, I'm in a Johnson Controls meeting, sitting next to this guy who introduces himself as the man, the myth, the legend.
And, no, didn't.
And he and I get to talking at this Johnson meeting, and he kind of goes, well, you know, I do controls, but I'm also a writer. One day I'm going to be a famous writer. And I said, well, that's interesting because I do controls, and one day I'm going to be a famous painter because I was painting at the time. And out of that, friendship sort of born around art sort of came up. And, you know, I would see Kenny at meetings or we'd get back and forth. He'd show me what he was writing or send it to me. And I would send him some pictures of my paintings. And we had these great discussions about art. So fast forward, and Kenny, I'll let you pick the story up, because a couple of years later, I think it was 2010, I see Kenny at a Tritium meeting, and that was sort of the fatal thing. Mark, you were actually running that meeting. So Kenny, I didn't show up for one of the sessions because
we played hooky. Okay. I remember this now. And to Eric's point, we were in this fabulous resort in Arizona or somewhere. And we were early risers. I remember I always like to get coffee and go to the lobby and read and get out of the room. And I see this guy over there and he's stenciling or sketching something. And he's, you know, just kind of looking at stuff. And we started a conversation, and if you remember, the book, Eric, was Sir Joshua Reynolds.
That's
and
right.
It was he created the Art Institute and the thing in London. He told the king at the time, he said, if we want to ever catch up to the Italians or maintain pace with the Dutch and the Italian artists, we need to start an institute and get it rolling. And so he had created this Art Institute, and it was a heck of a book, but it was about the fundamentals of getting good at something. And, you know, really you dig it and you learn from all the experts, you go through mentorships and then you go through the academies and then you start your own branch of whatever it is. And, you know, I think I must've stuck with us because, we did play hooky at a meeting. I was going to the meeting and I remember I had my notepad and I was all set, you know, trying to find the room or wherever it was. And Eric says, hey, He goes, forget the meeting. I want to talk to you. I'll get you a drink. We'll go sit by the pool and talk. I said, well, okay.
Nice.
That was it. All you have to do is offer Kenny a drink, and he will definitely
sidetrack me. Yeah. Well, and then what it was is the way I remember it, was that Eric had started to put his time and effort and energies, his creative energies into the Control Trends site. And he needed content, and the best way to get content is to get, you know, ask other people to get involved. So we created a scenario that would immediately involve myself and my participation, and we were writing under pen names, and then Eric started the secret handshake thing, and that was the first time I saw the power of the internet. In other words, to me, it was kind of spacey, and social media, blah blah blah. But Eric started this thing where every distributor would have a secret handshake. We had to make up a story about how we had some sort of a secret handshake between distributors and within our business world that, you know, gave us credit and you know, it was like, you know, some sort of, it was all manufactured, it was all science fiction, but it was a lot of fun. And that, I think, got it all started. I remember first time I saw my name on the Control Trends thing there, and I said, dang, this is fun. We're going to keep this rolling, so.
Well, right. And out of that, sort of the Control Trends Awards was born, because what happened once we created the Control Trends site is it's just difficult to get content. So little do people know that the original Control Trends Awards was going to be all sort of smoke and mirrors. It was going to be, I was going to actually film the whole thing in our studio at our office. We're using a green screen and pictures of people clapping and stuff like that. And because I was trying to get vendors to put up content, to give me some content to put up. So I figured, well, if you were nominated, Mark from Linkspring, hey, you know, come on Control Talk now, or send us some stuff we can post on the website so maybe your product wins. We were still going to count the votes and everything. But then what we were going to do was we were going to say, okay, and the winner is Linkspring. Oh, accepting the award for Linkspring today, we'd have one of our warehouse people come up and do it or something like that. And I'd have the fake people from Hollywood clapping and all that stuff. So I had this whole thing orchestrated in my head. And Kenny said, you know what? I think people might be willing to sponsor. Before you go too far with that, we should reach out and see if people were interested. And lo and behold, people were. So we had sponsors, and that was where the first Control Trends Awards took place in Dallas. It was a real award show. Mm-hmm. But originally it was set up as a way to generate content for the Control Trends site.
Wow,
it was a real though meritorious effort that we thought was important. Somebody had just recently retired, and they had spent over 30 plus years.
Warner Buck,
and he was just, it was just like, you know, he just disappeared off the stage. Nobody knew what happened to him, where he went. He wasn't recognized. You know how he changed the industry. So Eric and I started thinking, you know what, we've got to get some kind of a tool, some kind of recognition. Plus, we were just in the very beginning of awareness how our industry had no parity with the other professions. And we needed to do something to bring a whole lot of limelight and a whole lot of attention to some of the incredible people. I remember one time a guy we were talking to about this, he said that my kids still don't know what I do for a living. I go to work in the morning, I come back home at night. We live in a beautiful house. They get, you know, we're doing all well economically and socially, but nobody really knows what I do for a living. What is a sales engineer? And we said that was it.
So that was it. We had to do it. So even though it was our intentions originally was to generate content, we very quickly realized that our industry needed some. As a matter of fact, Kenny, I found a clip, the original clip promoting the Control Trends Awards. I'll roll that real quick and people can take a look at this going way back.
Hollywood has the Academy Awards. The music industry has the Grammys. Baseball has the All-Stars, pro football has the Hall of Fame. Virtually any group of professionals has a way of honoring their superstars. That is except for the HVAC industry. My name's Eric Stromquist, and with your help, I'd like to change that. What we're proposing is the first annual Control Trends Awards. These awards are designed to acknowledge the people and the companies that make our industry great. So think about it. At one point in time, there were no Oscars, there were no Grammys, there were no All-Pros, and there were no All-Stars. They only came about because a group of people got together and decided it's time for us to acknowledge the superstars in our industries. So please join me and Control Trends, and let's acknowledge the superstars of the HVAC industry.
Cool.
So now that it's you guys have a relationship that's 10 years old, think, we're all married. What is that 10-year anniversary gift that you have to give your wife? So you've got to give each other's, you know, I mean, so you got to think of this gift that you got to give each other now that you're celebrating 10 years together.
Well, hang on. I got to ask Kenny this. My wife hates control trends. I mean, she's accused me of loving Kenny more than I love her, because obviously Kenny and I have to cut this on the weekends, right? It's a lot of work. It's a labor of love. So my wife has been none too supportive. So she would probably say, you need to give me a 10-year gift for putting up with you and Kenny.
I think that actually sounds best. That,
well, Eric, I give you the 10th year anniversary gift. Yeah. What is the appropriate? It has to do with, traditionally, it's associated with gifts of tin or aluminum. But there's nothing wrong with breaking tradition with a gift that's best commemorated of true love.
All right, there you go.
Elegance and personal creation.
Kenny, check your office. I'm going to send you 10 rolls of aluminum foil, buddy.
That's what I'm saying. So they get more expensive on the 20th year and the 30th year. You start going from tin to gold to
diamond and all that other stuff. Yeah. So the last question is, so here how you guys got started, and you mentioned folks retiring and things, and, you know, part of the Control Trend Awards have been, you know, the Hall of Fame Award and things like that. So one of the ideas that myself and Paul Oswald, who used to be a formidable force in the industry, and we all know him from ESI days and one of the truly great master system integrators, came up many years ago that we should create a what we call a crotchety old men controls home in Florida, in which we take all of our our best technology, we make it a smart place. And then people like us, when we're ready to go out to pasture or whatever, we would all retire there and just enjoy the rest of our lives. So there you go. Let's make that part of the whole Control Trends movement.
Right. And of course, we would know how to override the thermostats if we were too hot or too cold.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And of course, Paul Oswald is one of our Hall of Fame members. So
anyway, so that could be the next step in this progression of the Control Trends movement.
Well, listen, Marcus, we're hoping, you know, sort of the purpose of this show is to sort of review 2018 and then sort of speculate on what we might see in 2019. So from your perspective, what were some of the trends you saw in 2018?
Well, first, you know, having been in this business for many years now, I thought 2018 was by far the best year that our industry has gone through, for lots of different reasons. Obviously, the continued advancement of super technology by, you know, the vendor and the OEM and technology provider communities, the coming of age, if you will, of a lot of talk in and around the master system integrators, and other things such as the conversation changing as well. You know, it used to be back in the day, we talked about connectivity and integration and, you know, and automation. You know, today, all of those are part of the conversation, but we've added a lot more things to it. You know, a lot of the conversation today is we're talking about space utilization, productivity, wellness, the occupant experience, as an example. We've gone from clipboards to tablets and phones to manage the buildings. And so I think the big thing for me is not only the advancement of technology and the acceptance by the built community, the building owners and operators, but also that conversation, how it's changed and how it's progressed.
That's a lot to unpack there, Marcus. Kenny, you want to take the first stab? Those are great, great. I agree completely, but I think we got to talk about them some more. Kenny, you want to take the first stab at some of the stuff Mark was talking about?
Well, sure. The first one I like is and I agree that the way we've seen things happen, you know, there's always barriers of entry. There's always, you know, footprints. There's always costs. You know, there's always things. I think this is the first year that I've experienced in the industry where all those barriers were pretty well dealt with. There was no reason that you could not get first stepped and create a modular approach towards any of the aspects that we talk about in the smart, connected, intelligent building. To Marcus's point, there's been, you know, a tremendous reduction in upfront costs for very formidable building control, building automation. I mean, you know, when you think about Ported Niagara, when you think about the incredible small IO smart devices that now are available. So now basically we've shifted from our style where we've needed to make these first steps had to be so formidable. You know, the investments, you needed so much money and so much whatever. Now you need a creative marketing approach to deliver solutions. So I agree with everything you said, Marcus.
Well, and I want to sort of chime in on that because I think the marketing is key. You know, many times this year, Kenny and I have repeated that if you don't have a great product, you're not in the game. If you don't have great service, you're not in the game. So it really gets down to the differentiator is how stuff is presented, because I think more so than ever, we've seen so many choices for owners. So how can you make it simple for them so that they can choose? So I think the message has become as equally as important as the product. Agree or disagree, boys?
Oh, sure. I think it's been like a realistic surrendering of proprietary, obstacles. You know, the thing. I think there's still some players out there that insist on my way or the highway, or I want it all. In terms of, you know, how they handle large portfolios and you know, distributed environments with building automation. But I think it's the first time I've seen multiple vendors understand what the users want. You know, and I think the educational shows that we've been to and some of the big, you know, meetings with like a RealCon, IBCon, you know, Project Haystack, you know, Haystack Connections, you know, all these industry events, the summits that have gone on, and the educational process to the user, where the user truly now can interface in our business intelligently. They're up to speed. They know what they want. They know what they need, and they know they're not going to take, you know, the round peg for the square fit anymore. You know, it's just not going to happen. So I think, you know, this was the first year where I've actually found, you know, excuse me, less of a story that we couldn't honestly believe ourselves. Remember back, we used to sell, you know, 10 years ago to that point, we said we had, open systems, and we did. You know, we had, proprietary, backnet that had, you know, you can make it proprietary. Lawn, same thing. So, excuse me, guys. But you know, this was the first year where I did not feel any kind of remorse in saying that we have a truly open system. And if you guys can get BackNet, available to us, whatever you have, whatever legacy system you have, or whatever you want to put in for the future, you can make it future proof. So,
right. Well, I think Kenny's totally on it with the owners being more educated. I think the other thing with the messaging, sort of tagging onto the messaging, is that. Now it's not just about the product. When you're talking about it, I mean, I think Ken Sinclair sort of began to talk about the humanization of the building, the symbiotic relationship between the building and the control system. And I think that has got to become part of your messaging. You have to have those conversations where, you know, we've talked about the $300 rule. And for those of listeners who might not know what that is basically $300 per square foot goes into the employees. So if you can make them more productive, that's what the owners are paying attention to, Kenny. So you have to bring that into sort of your marketing and your conversation. I'm sorry, Mark, I stepped on you there. So
yeah, and I think too is that as an industry, we are progressing along. We're hearing the owners and the building operators, first of all, and I think that's truly important to hear what they have to say. And then, again, it's not just about integration anymore. Don't get me wrong, it's truly, absolutely part of the solution, but it is truly driving measurable business outcomes. And to your point, making an employee more productive or reducing the time an employee is sick due to the office environment, you know, wrong type of temperature or this, that, and the other. And I mean, all these studies now have come out and are starting to show that, and it actually means dollars to the bottom line of an organization, where we did not have these types of discussions even 3 to 5 years ago.
Sure.
No, we didn't. And I think the other thing that goes along with this is the fact that the owners are aware of this, but if you own a business, just getting the millennials to come to work, you better have a cool environment, and they better have controls. I remember Comfy, Kenny, with Lindsay Baker, that product where the tenants feel like they're part of that sort of ecosystem, that environment where they have the ability to have control over their environment.
Well, I mean, that's a beautiful, I mean, let's just stop there for a second and talk about that. Because again, when you talk about marketing messaging, you talk about the first times where we really, you know, had this total transparency into the system. I think that's another word that, you know, fits into it. Now our systems are transparent. But imagine when we used to sell placebic thermostats. Do you remember, guys, how, and you know, it was like kind of a joke, you know, it wasn't a joke, but we put in range stops so they couldn't, you know, the user couldn't dial or move the set point beyond this or beyond this. We put in, you know, remember the first features we had in the software, with, they can move the thermostat up and down all they wanted, but they were going to get 2 points this way or 2 points, you know, 2 degrees this way. And imagine now that, you know, that just so, that's so reversed, you know, 180 degrees in the other direction, where we now have Comfy, where all the placebic aspects that were basically, you know, misleading the users because it was all about saving energy. And I don't care what those tenants think, we're not going to turn that air conditioner past, you know, 68, or we're not going to turn the heating past 72, period. You know? So to make a long story short, I mean, remember the days where they used to tell, bring a sweater to work, or tell your kids to have a sweater in their locker because we're not going to turn the heat up past, you know, whatever degrees. And we've seen this just in complete reversal. And I think what the Comfy, what it did was it put a connection to the people. So they felt, you know, tied that they, if they needed 10 minutes of heating or 10 minutes of cooling, got that reaction, they wind up turn up to be the most energy conscious people in the world, because as soon as they're happy, they'd say, I'm comfy, and it shut down the, you know, the tempered air coming into their zone. And then we realized the metrics that became involved was we finally had an honest zone system that knew where everyone was precisely because their smart device contacted, you know, or made them aware in terms of monitoring where the people were. So you really know when people came to work, while they were at work, where they went. And now all of a sudden you have all this data that became, you know, manifested and could really make those dollars available. But I think one of the most important things that came around, and you talk about Paul Oswald, I remember this Ken St. Clair's show, Mark, you were on the board, their panel, and the metrics. We finally got metrics that proved that, you know, the point, all the way to the lighting metric, where now it's very typical. You have 8 scenarios for a typical school day where the kids come in all energetic and whatever. You got to calm them down right before lunch. You got to speed them up, you know, or not really speed them up in terms of chemically, but in terms of, you know, the physiologically, you know, where the lighting can be so influential in terms of adjusting the behavior and adjusting the attitudes. And now we see this going all the way into the circadian rhythms, where instead of just chickens producing eggs every 20 hours instead of every 24 hours, because we fool them with the light and darkness, and then you have your growth facilities for the marijuana industry. Now we see that we're putting these lighting, these knowledgeable algorithms into play to have people recover from operations and very serious medical issues, because we're so tied to our environment. So once we put all that into play, then we set a whole new business at large, you know, where people can actually mine that potential data, you know, and wow.
Yeah, and I think to your point about data, that truly, I think, was revolutionary for 2018, that you could not, you know, go meet a potential end user or offer any type of solution without talking about data and how it's going to be used and the benefits and things like that. So
became part of the daily dialogue.
Exactly. So, you know, another area, you know, we talk about some of these, the business side of the business, which we just talked about, from the technology side of the business. You know, one of the things that we saw, at least I saw, and I think you guys agree and many of the audience will, is the move to the edge and, you know, greater computing power for less money and being able to process and do things at that device level, at that edge level, truly started to come of its own in 2018. And
yeah, I want to hop in there, Mark, because you're right. And that was 2018 was it. And of course, Linkspring, the company you work with, is one of the pioneers. You're one of the first people to come out with an edge controller. So for our audience who might not know, what makes a controller an edge controller?
At the end of the day is being able to connect at that edge, at the source, at that device level, gain access to the data. And in many cases, you can push it up to a cloud environment if you want to, or process that data right there at that device level, and then do command and control based on the data processing or the analytics and things like that. And again, there's a lot of pros for that you don't have to, you're not clogging up a network, you can do it faster, more accurate in real time and so forth and so on. And again, the computer technology and the applications now have allowed us to really do that. And just to plug into 2019, I see more and more of that becoming mainstay in our industry, and that's going to become the norm versus the exception.
Right. Well, the other thing we heard all year was the advent of the IP controllers. Mm-hmm. So speak about IP controllers and what's the difference between an IP controller and a regular controller, and how do you see that shaking out as we go forward? I'd like both your guys' opinions on that.
Go ahead, Kenny.
Certainly, the IP controller, we started seeing it in specifications. So the first guys to get it took an opportunity. And basically, it's just data. It's about bandwidth. It's about getting more information flowing through what you have it. And some of the bottlenecks that were occurring in networks were due to going from MSTP to the field level devices, to the supervisory controllers, to the the front end, and then wherever it was going. So basically what IP controllers allow you is flexibility on installations and multiple installations. In other words, you can take an IP and everything that's you can take an IP power over Ethernet camera now to an IP controller and take it right where you want it to, and then have another network coming in for communications. So it's flexibility and it's powerful data. I want to revisit the next thing, but Mark, again, the edge controller explanation is great. What's your version of the IP controller? What benefits does that bring versus the older controller styles?
Well, again, I just think the whole fact that it's IP based. That it is IP based. And that everything today has moved to IP. And again, it just offers that flexibility and the power that IP actually brings. And I think the world, we are heading, we're living in an IP world environment.
So what is that going to do for protocols like BACnet and LAN and things like that?
I think they are well suited for that. And, as they continually advance, there will be new standards and new working groups and so forth, which there already are, for making those our traditional protocols IP enabled, so to speak, and work and be flexible in the IP environment.
All right. Well, so Mark, with all these sort of new technologies and the need for data and the owners being more educated, it seems like one of the things that's happening is the term master systems integrator. We're hearing a lot more of that, but now we're hearing degrees to master systems integrators. It's like they're different levels. Speak about how you guys have seen the concept of master integration or master integrators change in 2018.
Well, we've seen it change, at least I've seen it change drastically. And again, I hear it's part of the daily conversation now, talking about master system integrators and master system integration and what it actually means. And just about 2 months ago, ourselves, Linkspring, along with Intelligent Buildings, Anixter, Sky Foundry, and Navigant Research, did a survey research project on the very subject of master system integrators. And it was interesting to, talk about and listen to or view some of the information that got out of it. And what really kind of stood out for me is the vast amount of areas in which the master system integrator needs to have domain knowledge and people, not only controls, which you would expect in HVAC, but physical security, the network, cybersecurity, video, CCTV, and so forth and so on. And that's what building owners and operators expect from a master system integrator, that they truly are a master of all these different domains in the operational side of a building.
Well said, Marcus. Kenny, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, I completely agree. Because you see the transition where there were those domain experts, and Marcus, you named several of them, but at one point in time, they were individually recognized within a specification, and it was economics. If you were working with a certain lighting company for this many years, and you were working with IT doing your networks, which was a different company, they all were kind of isolated in their own areas of expertise, their own domains. And then we see a master systems integrator that takes on a role where, in-house, they've got the staff capability that the parallels exceeds the branches. I mean, I was visiting a master systems integrator, and I was just overwhelmed how big the overhead was. They had 14 certified N4AX technicians. They had their own graphics department, their own CAD department. I mean, they had greater capabilities than the branch I had just visited. So I we're seeing a transition. We're seeing the center of the locus of control, where the people that used to control the message, the vendors used to, it's shifted from vendors and manufacturers to other people in the industry. And one of those partners would be the master systems integrator, but also distributors. We've seen the rise of distributors that have become the compelling voices in our industry and have shifted the attentions and the way business has been done for so many years, where you have people having national accounts now. You take a look at some of the large integration distributors like Control Co, like Cochran, like Stromquist, and they have change the viewpoint of the user. Instead of relying on the particular branch, now they go to the distributor. And this distributor becomes their trusted agent, their trusted advisor, who normally is going to connect them to a master systems integrator that they've vetted and trust, ultimately. And the accountability that you had mentioned previously, Marcus, was that now they want one throat to choke. So there's a role now of this master systems integrator that becomes the GC of integration. So they then become the police force or the police agency that makes sure nobody slips in a disparate system. They make darn certain that the lights and the access control and everything in that building, elevators, escalators, whatever it might be, has a protocol that can be easily integrated into whatever the central building.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense, Kenny. My question then would be, I'm sorry, you go on.
Yeah, so I'll throw this out to you two. So this role of a master system integrator, should a guaranteed SLA be part of the conversation between building owner, operator, and a master system integrator? Or uptime for systems, response time, so forth and so on.
Is that a service liability agreement? What is an SLA again?
Just more of a guarantee that, we guaranteeing that you're...
Absolutely.
It'll be up 99.9% of the time or this, that, and the other. And because I, at the end of the day, I think it should be part of the conversation. It should be part of that. That's one of the things that I think master system integrators can help ensure and guarantee for the most part, So what do you guys think?
Oh, I wouldn't touch that with a 20-foot pole. We got too
many. Well, I see it happening, Mark. Somebody mentioned too, that, you can see more things as a service being provided. Mm-hmm. And, Eric and I have had several exploratory conversations with people from neighboring industry channel experts that say our building automation industry is running a parallel to previous industries integration. And that was basically the IT. Where you had the people that provided the services could not get close enough to the end users to get their business, so they performed these partnerships, and so this particular person we interviewed said that we need to make friends with people in lateral capabilities so that we do have somebody IT on our side, knows how to handle networks, so that we can become part of the managed service wave that's going to eventually have its way in our industry. And we had been to several meetings, national meetings, where they said that the managed services are on the rise, that you know, one day, unfortunately, the number of components being sold for a project, you know, particularly building automation, is reducing. The architecture and the, you know, the diagram, ladder diagrams, going from maybe five levels to two levels, mm-hmm. maybe one, because we've seen the IP controllers come in now. So what are you going to do? You're going to get into managed services. You're going to get into doing this, like you said. You're going to either have somebody on staff, or you're going to have a trusted partner, business partner, that together you provide a portfolio of services that would be, to your point too, nobody has $1 million or $500,000 anymore to buy this thing overnight. So you're going to see people provide these services where you're going to pay $5,000 or $7,000 a month because they can't afford that. And eventually it's up to us to solve how we can provide the immediate delivery of the services and then ensure we recoup over time our investments. So it's a tremendous opportunity, but it's a tremendous challenge.
Well said, Kenny. Well said. Well, guys, let's shift gears a little bit because, Mark, you know, you were one of the early pioneers in terms of tracking cybersecurity, creating cyber awareness. What have you seen in 2018, and what do you see looking out into 2019 vis-a-vis cybersecurity?
Interesting. I think the cyber threats continue to grow, and they are more sophisticated and deadly with each passing year. That said, I believe that 2019 is the year of truth for cybersecurity. I think generally, as an industry, while many have embraced the importance of cybersecurity and doing things, we're still falling short. And I think 2019, we can't afford to fall short anymore. One of the interesting things that has crossed my desk recently is in California, they passed a new law, and I'm going to read this. It's a new law that goes into effect that any smart device sold in California, including consumer and enterprise tools, starting January 1, 2020, manufacturers will have to include reasonable security features to protect stored or transmitted information from unauthorized access, destruction, use, modification, or disclosure.
Wow.
So that, to me, is telling right there. If, you know, obviously California has always been a state that, you know, starts a lot of trends and things. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised as more and more states do this. But as an industry, we talk about it. There's plenty of information out there. There's plenty of things to do to help ensure cybersecurity, but I think we still have a long way to truly embrace what we need to be doing collectively as an industry.
I agree. And I think the reason why is that it's a carrot and the rod. Not many people are interested in taking on the liability or assuming the liability if they can't make a profit and can't pay for it. And you can't make it a revenue source until you are a master at it and provide services commensurate to a fee or a charge. So under those managed services, you're going to have to get you have to rely on somebody out there that is an expert. And we've seen a rise. Yeah, and to your credit, Mark, you and Fred Gordy were our first recognized control trend cybersecurity heroes, so to speak, because nobody knew what was going on. I mean, it was like a hot potato. Now finally we're seeing that there's Traveler Agency, for instance, has a nice rider that you can add to your insurance policy that provides specific cybersecurity insurance. California does lead the way, and I'm kind of glad to hear it because there's directions that people need to have. I mean, if you know you got a problem and you don't know how to solve it, then you got two problems. If you got a problem and you know how to solve it, then that problem's lessened, then you can take progressive steps to achieve a certain level of cybersecurity. We have heard it's too early to release it, but we were privileged to hear that there's going to be a very serious dashboard being added to software in the future that is going to give you indications of your cybersecurity health on your network. We've seen people like Optigy take a device that was designed to monitor the health of your BACnet
Optigo,
network.
Kenny. I think it's Optigo, right?
Optigo. What is it, Optigy?
That's right.
I'm sorry. Yes, Optigo. Optigy. I'm sorry, Optigo. Sorry. What's his name? Ping. He's going to be mad at me. So sorry. No, you can always edit that if you want. But okay, so Optigo, for instance, came up with a very clever iteration of something that was designed to do BACnet health monitoring of the network. So if you take on a project, you can do a scan of the network and say, hey, you're at 48%. So when I put my stuff on here, it didn't go, but it did diminish your health of your network. In fact, we improved it to 68%. But they now took that and they can determine anomaly activity and behavior of your network, where if something that shouldn't be getting all this activity all of a sudden does, then you know somebody is having its way with your network and serving as a conduit for activities that aren't
indicators should be coming out. So you think that's the trend we're going to see going forward, guys?
Absolutely, and we need it. And so I think Mark, to your point, we have been very slow to adopt realistic cybersecurity measures individually, organizationally, and professionally. So, and if there's going to be consequences if you don't. So it's going to be a good one. It's good. I'd like to know what products are available, because Eric, you and I are in the business of selling services and widgets and components. What I hope we can do is sell, almost like the software licensing agreements. Let's sell a cybersecurity license, whatever. So it becomes part of a packaged, integrated solution.
Well, real quick, guys, is there anybody that is doing a very specific cybersecurity training that you guys are aware of that our integrators and distributors could take advantage of?
I think Linkspring has one, don't they?
No, we don't, unfortunately. I think NIST probably has some. There's a couple others that I can't think of on the top of my head that I know that there is information, available or whatever. So I'll get that to you and you can post it. They are definitely out there. And something that, when we first started talking about cybersecurity back in 2012, end of 12, one of the things that, I thought was very important was it's a shared responsibility. So what does that mean? It's the manufacturer's responsibility. It is the integrator. It is the distributor. And it's the building owner's responsibility to ask and demand, what are we going to do with respect to helping secure this building operational network, if you will. And manufacturers obviously build it into their products and solutions. Distributors, and integrators offer it, so forth and so on. And I don't think that's changed. It's absolutely a shared responsibility.
Very cool. Couldn't agree more. All right, boys and girls, we're going to transition from 2018 to 2019. The first big event of 2019 happens in Atlanta on Sunday, January 13th. Mark, Kenny, tell our audience what that is.
I have no clue. What are you talking about?
Super Bowl? No. Of course, it's the Super Bowl of the building automation and control industry. Getting started on this one, we have probably, again, we say it every year, but I think this year, the way things have lined up, over time, things come together. It's one of these like composite things. You start out and you get the location, and we're delighted that we've got the Fox Theater. It is an amazing facility. They give tours to it just for historic purposes. It reminds me of one of those speakeasy environments where it was built for the height of economic enjoyment. It's a lavish facility that the Fox Theater, the Hollywood Fox bought 20 of these facilities and converted them to Fox theaters across the country. Now there's only three remaining, and we're going to have the 2018 Control Trends Awards, January 13th from 6:30 to 9:30 at the Fox Theater at Atlanta, in Atlanta. And this place is just, it's an amazing facility. It's just, it has that ambiance that we always strive to get, that Hollywood type thing. You feel like you're going into a very special environment just by going through the portal of the door. You see these historic pictures. And then we have this Egyptian ballroom that they just, the way I understand it, they invested $8 million to refurbish this.
Just for our event. But
they knew the control kinds were coming, and you know, so that we're going to have our party in there, and it's going to be a banquet style thing again. You know, it's going to be it's a pre-event thing. EZIO has their VIP event,
but you have to reach out to them to get an invitation to go to that. You can't just show up for that this year,
right? And then from there, we're going to go into the main ballroom area. We're going to have some surprises, some entertainment, and you know, just a tremendous show.
No, you're right about that. But the venue and all the stuff you just said pales. I mean, absolutely pales in comparison to our MC. Can you tell us about the MC we have this year?
Oh well, I mean, we've got a dynamic duo that's unbeatable. We have a guy who's the industry stalwart, and he brings some showmanship and entertainment to the stage, and he's assisted by a co-MC that brings grace and elegance to the stage, along with knowledge. And together, Mark Petock and Kim Brown are the top MCs of the industry. And there's Mark there.
Marcus. Oh, wow. You guys.
Mark, just so you know, stalwart in German and Swedish means stud. So he called you an industry star.
I got it. You know, we talk about the awards. You know, one of the things that I'm finding this interesting this year is that we have a lot of new categories that we did not have previously. And so it's going to be interesting to see, who are the recognized winners of these categories. And I think that's one of the unique things too about the Control Trend Awards is that there's always going to be the stalwart of awards, you know, thermostats and automation control of the year and so forth. But as our industry changes, there's always new categories and some categories that go by the wayside. So that's what I'm going to find extremely interesting. We have a lot of new categories.
Well, a lot of new people got nominated from, Silicon Valley, industry, adjacent industries really got a lot of support. So we might have some surprise winners this year. It's probably not going to be just the same group of usual suspects. So it's going to be exciting.
The other thing too about the venue, when the three of us went and visited it, and just walking the halls and seeing the photographs of the performers and people who have graced their presence in the stage there at the theater, you're in awe of seeing, from politicians to entertainers to musicians to movie stars to industry giants and so forth and so on. And if those walls could speak, it would just be amazing to hear. Well,
it'd probably be X-rated too with some of them.
I don't know about that.
Hey guys. And Mark, to your point about the show itself again, and we're delighted that not only that there's been a kind of a control trends, we monitor the trends, and some of the items that were of very importance, say 3, 4, 5 years ago, no longer rise up to bubble up to become the trends and the important products and solutions. To your point, that are now fixated, and one of them is the IoT thing, and how you have a Raspberry Pi controller popping up next to one of the venerated manufacturers' controllers. So it shows clearly that there's been a shift of interest and a shift of economic interest into different styles of performing the same thing. That is providing comfort There's been a huge awareness, huge growth in actually determining what do people need to be comfortable? How do they feel part of the ambiance of the building so that they feel integrated and they perform at the best of their capabilities and how people how these owners are trying to reduce absenteeism, reasons for people to call in sick. I remember back when they first started coming out with CO2 monitoring and the sick building syndrome, how we sold those things like toilet paper because bank employees, everybody thought they were in a building that was sick, and you had to prove to them that you've got fresh air and that the levels of car CO2, and you talk about schools and the ventilation requirements, the ASHRAE imposes, you have to prove that you're providing this now, and it just keeps getting more extreme. Another thing about the Control Trends Awards that is just absolutely delightful is the participation from around the world. We now have 53 countries have voted in the Control Trends, and so the globality of the Control Trends is for real, and it's something that Eric and I constantly try to deal with, because there's certain persuasions or certain products that are isolated to this part of the world, and some of them are global in nature, and they're the same product to all the countries. And so it's an amazing industry, and I think that achieves this is what I'm getting at, is that one of the primary reasons that we started in the beginning of the conversation here to the show was, why is the Control Trends important, and why is it successful, why is it growing? It is because people understand now that we have a heck of an industry. We speak the same language around the world, and that is buildings and comfort. And so it doesn't matter. Eric and I have been around the world with the different meetings or whatever, and everywhere we go, it's the same challenge. It's the same opportunity. And some of these buildings are 1,000 years old, 500 years old, 200 years old, and a year old. And yet, each building poses its own set of challenges, and we sell the products and solutions that solve those, and the people that do this, from the contractors to the distributors to the vendors, get to come and hang out one night and recognize each other in the same room and say, wow, so that's, I finally met Mark Petock. That's what he looks like. That's Mark.
Well said, so, Kenny. Well, listen, before we wrap it up, Mark, final question for you is, what do you think the biggest trend we're going to see in 2019 will be?
I it's hard to try to just put one. I'm going to say choice. And the availability of choice from solutions, applications, and so forth and so on, I think probably is going to be the biggest trend driving everything, whether the edge, the platforms, the software as a service model, to so forth and so on. So I would say choice.
Kenny, I'm going to use a vocab word here for you, buddy. So Mark, is that a harbinger of things to come from Linkspring in 2019? Can you expand upon that comment?
I'm going to be, I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm going to say, Mr. Petock has no comment at this time.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, guys.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in. You've been listening to Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings video cast and podcast. Our guest this week has been Mark Petock from Linkspring, and also the MC of the Control Trends Awards. And of course, from the man, the myth, the legend, and myself, we appreciate your support over the year of 2018. Looking forward to a great 2019. So remember, be bold, stay in control, and stay relevant.
Indeed, Eric.
Indeed, Kenny and Mark. And that's a wrap.
All righty.
All right.